Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, I got a question for you, Tommy.
Why did Adele cross the road?
No, why did she cross the road?
To say hello from the other side. No. Oh, that wasn't the question.
That was okay. Not the question.
All right, go ahead.
It's an interesting joke, though. My question is, what constitutes an emergency?
Personal or governmental?
Oh, I don't know. Let's say personal. Let's go ahead and go down that road.
Well, the power's out, water line broken, don't have money to pay bills. All those could be emergencies. What are we going to eat for dinner?
That'd be an emergency for sure. Well, what do you think constitutes an emergency as regards to the government?
Oh, there's so many things going on with the government. They're all emergencies.
Well, the reason I'm asking is because the topic for this week is one that you had suggested, the presidential powers and emergency powers.
Yes, because there's a lot of debate about that since our fine president, Mr. Trump, has said that he might declare a national emergency to get his border wall built so he doesn't have to fool with Congress. So a lot of people are talking about whether it's constitutional, whether it's legal, how it would be challenged. Does he have the power to do it? Is it really that broad and everything else? So I thought, well, maybe we should look at that and see what's behind it.
Well, it's a very interesting topic, and I didn't really know too much about it to begin with, because I'm just a simple courtroom lawyer. I'm not one of these fancy schmancy government lawyers.
Yeah, so you went to your Black's Law Dictionary and went to work, huh?
I looked it up in my Funk and Wagnalls.
Oh, that's where you find that stuff.
So the president has certain emergency powers that they're able to use. Now, throughout history, I guess, and I actually didn't go into the old history of where this comes from. Did you look at it?
No, but it's in the original Constitution.
Where is it in the original Constitution?
Well, I don't know. I didn't look that far.
Well, let me look it up. Well, the basis for the emergency powers is actually the Constitution does not expressly grant the president any additional powers in times of a national emergency. But basically, the constitutional scholars think that the framers implied these powers because of the structural design of the executive branch enables it to act much faster than the legislative branch, because if things have to go through Congress and whatnot, it just takes time. And it makes sense, because if there is an emergency, you might need somebody to act very quickly. Basically, one of the earliest claims of an emergency power was at the center of President Lincoln's suspension of habeas corpus without congressional approval in 1861. He claimed that the rebellion, the Civil War, created an emergency that permitted him the extraordinary power of unilaterally suspending the writ. That was one of the first times that it kind of really came into major play.
That was so that people couldn't be returned to the South to stand trial, where they would probably never get a fair trial.
Correct. Yeah, so he suspended that. But, I mean, it makes sense to have something like that, because you might need somebody who can act swiftly and take care of things.
I think it also recognized that we live in an ever-changing world, and you cannot always have laws that are out there to cover every circumstance that may arise. And sometimes you have to have something that can intervene and cover it until it can be legislated.
Right. Now, this national emergency power of the president kind of really came into scrutiny in the mid-70s.
Yes, along with Watergate. The Richard Nixon had used his powers of national emergency for things such as there was a postal strike and there were some other things that went on, and he was also fighting off the Watergate scandal at the time, and they felt that he had kind of abused this. So they decided they wanted to get together and do something about it. So they did the National Emergency Reform Act or something to that effect of 1976.
Right. So that's like kind of when it started trying to be kind of reined in, or at least people thought, hey, wait a second, maybe we need to rein this in a little bit.
Yeah, and they just said, you know, right now, the way this has gone through the centuries, we have given the president absolute power to do anything he wants to do here, and we need to have a check on that, because our government is set up as a series of checks and balances. And they were saying, this does not have the check to balance it.
Exactly.
So their original plan was, what they tried to pass was a law that said, if you had a majority of both houses say, no, this is not valid, that they could do it, and they didn't have, the president didn't have veto power. So all you needed was a simple majority of both houses, and you could nullify a national emergency. But the thing went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court in 1983 ruled that they did not have that power to do that, that that the veto power is constitutionally guaranteed, so therefore it had to go to the president, which, of course, if he wanted to do it, he was going to veto it, which meant it then went back and had to have a two-thirds majority vote by both houses of Congress to pass. That's an extensively higher bar than a simple majority.
Oh, much higher. And it's, I mean, if you look through the different votes that Congress has on different things like that, I mean, not many things are two-thirds. Unless right. It's like one of those feel-good things, like we want to honor this military canine dog that was wounded.
Right.
Everybody votes for that. I mean.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I mean, yeah, on any real issue where there's some sort of partisan politics going on, getting two-thirds is going to be pretty daggone tough.
And you got to figure that it would have to be against whoever the sitting president is, so that would mean both houses of Congress would most likely need to be predominantly the other party.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to get there if the same party as the president is ruling one of those two houses.
Now, Congress has actually never voted once in the last 40 years since the National Emergencies Act has been in effect to terminate a state of emergency. At no point, either before the court's decision or after Congress has ever attempted to exercise this check. So actually, it's never happened before.
No, they've never even attempted it. There's never been anything the president has done that has been challenged like that.
Now, the way these national emergencies work is that basically, once the president declares that there's been some sort of emergency, they lapse after 1 year, and they have to be renewed by each year by the president.
Right. Now, that came in the 1976 Act as well.
Yeah, it did.
Before that, it just stood until the president said, okay, I'm good now.
One of the longest-standing emergency powers in place right now is the one against Iran, which was enacted by Jimmy Carter as a result of the embassy and all that that took place in the 70s.
Yeah, they kidnapped our people.
It was the 80s, I guess. Late 70s, early 80s.
It was early 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they let them go. Well, they let them go on the day that Reagan took office.
Really?
Yep. That was, and they felt that it was just to spite Jimmy Carter, that even though his people had been doing all the negotiating, they didn't release him until the day that Reagan took office, so that Reagan was the one to announce it. And they felt like that the Iranians had done that just because they wanted to spite Carter.
Yeah. Now, part of the reason, a lot of people think that the reason lawmakers have actually never tried to challenge any of these emergency powers is that because the National Emergencies Act has actually been used in pretty much in good faith. You know, you want to assume that the leader of your country, the president, is going to be pretty responsible with what they do with this and understand, like, hey, this is a great power. I need to exercise it and use it judiciously. You know, they're basically not going to try to use this as some sort of pretext to get around Congress and do whatever they want, even though they're not going to get any kind of legislative approval for it. So I think that's kind of where we're at today. Is basically Trump has a wall. He wants to build a wall, and Congress won't go for it. And so what he wants to do essentially is try to kind of go around Congress and use this kind of creative method to say it's a national emergency and go ahead and fund it and build it anyway.
Well, the Congress, and really the people in general, they don't want to get into a thing where everything that the president does has to be scrutinized in a court of law. So, I mean, that's not the purpose of the judicial branch, is to determine if everything our government does is legal or not. And so what it would get down to is the court having to make a political decision, because that's in essence what they would be deciding. Is this real or is it politically motivated? And they don't want to get into that type of thing.
Yeah.
For instance, the only time that I could find where there was one that was struck down in 1952, President Truman declared a national emergency and ordered the Secretary of Commerce to take possession of and operate most of the country's steel mills after its workers went out on a nationwide strike. He argued that steel was needed for weapons and other war materials being used in the Korean War. That declaration was ultimately struck down by the Supreme Court a year later in a 6-3 ruling that said the president cannot take possession of private property to keep labor disputes from stopping steel production.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was the distinction. You have within the national emergency the right to redistribute governmental assets. You can't do it, though, to take away private property or tell businesses how they will operate or anything else.
You know, and if you're going to use that case, that could be precedent to say that you're not going to be able to take eminent domain of people's property along the border where you're going to build this wall, if you think about it.
Well, and that's one of the big questions, is that if he were to declare this a national emergency and they were to say, okay, we're going to challenge this in court, who could challenge it? The Congress couldn't challenge it,
yeah,
because who would have standing? You've got to have standing, and yeah, Congress could not demonstrate that they were substantially impacted by this to be represented as having standing.
Yeah, and I'll talk about standing later, but just for the simple question of, though, I think that case stands to the point, if the opinion did say that you can't take private property under this act, those people are going to have private property down there, and you can't take that.
Yeah, but the question is, you know, when they go around and they do a lot of these interviews that you see on TV here with what do you think about this? President says he's going to do this. He's saying it's an emergency. You know, you've got your people in Congress and everything saying there's no emergency. I don't know. Look at the statistics. It's all down, everything. Now go talk to the people that live on the border, that do live there, that have, or, you know, their property is on the border, and they'll tell you there is a problem.
Yeah.
I've got people coming through my property on a daily basis or whatever, and they're bringing drugs, and drug transactions are going on. That a lot of them are criminals, and I don't know what I might face when I walk out my door.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them that are in favor of it. Now, it's not so much a national argument that they're making as a personal, you know, this helps me personally.
Well, I mean, if I lived on the border, I mean, I don't know. I have a fence at my house. I like my fence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I got one around my pool to keep the deer from jumping in it. You know, what a deer in there.
So basically, I mean, I kind of, you know, have the government build a fence. Build a big fence. Such a big fence, we're going to call it a wall.
That's right.
So, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean.
Maybe it's a good way to get around some zoning ordinances as well. Because, you know, if you build a fence, usually it can only be like 6 feet high.
Yeah,
so, but well, the federal government builds one. It can be 20 feet
high.
They
can do whatever they want.
It can be made out of concrete.
Would it be a spite fence?
Oh, I think it's definitely a spite fence.
It's spiting the Mexicans and the incoming immigrants.
No, I think it's spiting all the Democrats, I think is the way Trump views it. I think this is Trump's version of a spite wall.
But yet you can read stuff from 5 or 6 years ago, and you had most of the people that were leading the Democratic Party calling for a wall then.
Yeah. Well, it's how it changes.
Now, wait a minute. What happened to 5 or 6 years ago? How did things change?
So if Trump decides he wants to try to get around Congress by declaring an emergency, the question comes in, where does this money come from? Because he's got to pull it from somewhere. Now, there's a couple different ideas about where he might pull it from. But I think before that, we have a motion before the court today.
Well, yes, your eminent domain ship. We would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right. Who do we have on the docket?
On the docket today, we have a brand new sponsor by the name of Care Of.
So you're probably asking yourself, what is Care Of?
Well, asking myself that.
Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door.
Now, it's a new year. You got new health goals. Everybody makes those New Year's resolutions, right?
That's right.
Well, this year, make health and wellness a top priority with the help of Care Of's monthly subscription vitamin service. Whether you're focused on glowing skin, boosting your energy levels, or getting more sleep, or generally just being healthy.
Now, when you go down the vitamin aisle sometimes at stores, it can be kind of confusing. You don't know what you're looking at. And that's why Care Of's online quiz lets you know exactly what you need. It's a fun online quiz and asks you about your diet, your health goals, and lifestyle choices. It only takes 5 minutes to find out your personal scientifically backed vitamin and supplement recommendations. They even have one for tongue-tiedness.
Well, you better subscribe to that one. Getting your vitamins should be easy and convenient. It can be really hard to know what vitamins or supplements you should be taking, but Care of makes it easy to find out what you specifically need to be your healthiest.
And here's the thing, too. If you're a vegan or a vegetarian, they have supplement options available to match your dietary needs.
Now, what I'd really like to tell you about is our own personal experience with it.
That's
because
right.
They were kind enough to set us up where we were able to log in and get our own personalized vitamin packets.
And I'll tell you, I took the quiz, and sure enough, I took the quiz that recommended some vitamins for me. I said, okay. And then next thing I know, a package shows up with my name on it and says, here, take these vitamins and individualized packets with my name on it.
Yeah, I had the same thing. And as you know, well, there's about 20 years between us. So the things that you might be interested in targeting with your vitamins would be different maybe from the things that I'm targeting.
Well, at least when you took the quiz, it didn't say don't bother.
Yeah, it just said you got one foot in the grave. So they thought I was worth keeping. So like one of my main concerns is energy. You know, old fellas like me, we don't get all the sleep we need when we're still working. I should be retired, but I'm still working and podcasting. So I needed something for energy, and that's exactly what they prescribed me, is some pills and some short energy sticks. And I'm telling you, those energy sticks, I take those before my workout each day, and I'm ready to go for the day.
So right now, you can get 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins. All you have to do is go to takecareof.com and enter the promo code CORT.
Go to takecareof.com and enter the promo code CORT for a 25% off your first month of personalized vitamins.
And you know what I like about the quiz?
What's that?
You can't fail it.
Well, that's true. Even I can do good on that, unlike I do on legal briefs.
You can do good. So one of the main places that people think that Trump may pull his money from is a statute that lets him reprogram unobligated funds that Congress has appropriated for military construction projects. It's probably about $20 billion in funding that the military has available right now in military construction and family housing accounts that has not yet been obligated, said a Todd Harrison, who directs the defense budget analysis at the Center for Strategic International Studies. Sounds like a fun place to work.
Yeah, so you just get to study what these decisions are.
So if President Trump were to use this money for building a wall, Harrison said, I suppose that would mean taking money away from other military construction projects. So, you know, where's the money going to come from? Because if you say it's emergency, it's got to come from somewhere. It's not going to materialize out of thin air.
Yeah, but it also says, though, that that money, if you do redirect it, first of all, he has to specify.
It does, yeah.
He can't just say, I want the money to build a wall. He has to say which fund he's taking it from.
Yeah, and basically what he has to do is he has to cite pretty specifically what the emergency is and talk about it, too. He can't just say, there's an emergency, here's what it is, I need money. He has to say exactly what the emergency is and kind of basically lay the groundwork as to why it's a national emergency. And then also, like you said, specify where the money is going to come from.
Yeah, and the thing is the money that's allocated for the defense funds, it has to still end up, it's obligated for military construction projects as long as that money is used to support the armed forces.
Right.
So you'd have to say, all right, now if you take this military spending, and it also says something about buildings and facilities for the armed forces.
Yeah.
If you take this and you build a fence, security is the basis of Homeland Security. It's not the Department of Defense.
Yeah.
So would you do that? Now, the other place that he may draw the money from is there is $13.9 billion in funding that has been allocated by the Congress over the last year for Army Corps of Engineers projects. So that's been allocated but not spent.
Right, and a lot of that is going to like natural disaster relief, like hurricanes that took place in Puerto Rico and different places like
Texas.
Texas.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that money's, although it hasn't been allocated, it's basically that's what it's for.
Right.
Or I guess maybe it's been
allocated.
Allocated, but it's not obligated.
Right. So what he could say is he could pull that money and put that under that. But he has to specify where it's coming from, and there are certain requirements that they have to somehow stretch it to say, yes, it is, it does fall in this category.
Yeah. The even some Republicans, Mac Thornberry of Texas, he basically said he does not think it's a good idea to take money from the military like that. And he's actually the ranking member on the House Armed Services Committee. So he's on the committee that actually oversees the budget and all that for the armed services. And he said there are really a lot of needs with regards to barracks, maintenance of facilities, all sorts of other military construction projects that are important for national security. So that's where you kind of have to look at national emergency and what's more important. Let's look at this. Is securing the fence or securing the wall more important in national emergency? Or is it actually more of an emergency to keep our military in operating order and not take money away from it? Because I think if you think about it kind of logically, it might be more important, more of an emergency, and so to speak, to keep our military up and running.
Right. Yeah, so there's a lot of it like that. And you know, one of the things that this is coming down to, I guess, is your alternative facts.
Yeah.
And it's the whole, I guess, way society is headed, the way our presidency is headed. There was a certain aura around the president that he was accepted as, he's the leader of our country, he's a smart person, he's doing what's best for us.
Right.
Now, sometimes people disagreed with what was best, but he was doing what was best for us. That mantle of the office has greatly eroded over the last decade.
Yeah.
And it's just a guy in there. It's nobody special anymore. And you know, it's the whole office itself has changed. And maybe it's because there's so much more available to us on the internet and all the other kind of stuff. I mean, you know, John F. Kennedy was looked at as almost a god for years. Now you look at all the philandering that went on and everything else, you know, it's no different than what Bill Clinton was doing. You know, you have Bill Clinton, and he was thought of as such, being such a good personable president. And then the other night they had the Bill and Monica thing on TV that went back through the whole Monica Lewinsky thing and all the other stuff that had gone on with him as governor prior to that. They're just people. And unfortunately, that's the way we're seeing them now, as people. So now you've got to say the president has declared a national emergency. Do we believe him?
Yeah. So where is the evidence of any kind of emergency is the real question. Because if you think about it, if we're talking about building a wall 5 years ago because we needed it and it didn't get built, it must not have been that much pressing of an emergency because it didn't get built and we're still here.
Right. And if you look at the stats that people are quoting now, you had more people crossing the border and more illegal drugs being seized at the border 5 or 6 years ago than you do now.
There's a Marty Letterman. He's a former deputy assistant attorney general in the Justice Department and also a professor at Georgetown University. And he said that there is no evidence of any emergency. He said attempted illegal crossings over the southern border are down. Almost all known or suspected terrorists who are apprehended attempting to enter the country are caught in airports or at sea. Perhaps most importantly, the situation at the border doesn't fit any plain language definition of an emergency. It's neither new nor unanticipated, nor particularly fast moving. In order to function, America's legal system depends on lawyers, legislatures, and judges to operate in the same fact-based universe. As that gets eroded, so does the power of law. So
exactly.
If you think about it, I mean, there is no real definition of what an emergency is, but some of the things that they looked at and have defined it as new, unanticipated, fast moving.
Right. And it's what facts are you basing this on? And before, people would make these decisions, everybody looking at the same facts and let's do what's best. Now you have two different sets of facts. What do you want to believe? I mean, you know, it's the same thing as climate change.
Yeah.
Is it real or are these hippie scientists just making that up?
Trump said that there's a humanitarian and security crisis at the southern border. And he had a primetime address that he did from the Oval Office. And he said the southern border is a pipeline for vast quantities of illegal drugs, including 90% of heroin that's killing Americans, which is kind of contrasting to what the DEA report said, and says basically that a small percentage of all heroin seized is along the border, land border, and between ports of entry. So it's kind of a little bit different according to some reports that you read.
Exactly. It's just like the terrorist threat. You know, he quoted some kind of number of terrorists that are pouring across our border. And yet they find that only six suspected terrorists were caught trying to cross our southern border, whereas you had thousands that were caught at airports. That's where most of them are caught, is at airports and other ports of entry like that.
Now, I don't doubt that it would be easy for a terrorist to come along the southern border at some point and slip across. I mean, they probably could.
Sure.
But they don't have, I mean, obviously they don't have to, because they try to do it through the airports because that's more direct and quicker.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. The one interesting thing that this other law professor was talking about, Harry Littman, who's also a former U.S. attorney, he said, how do the courts react to something they know is false? So basically, if this does get in front of a court, if he declares an emergency power and does this, and then it somehow works its way through the court system and gets to a judge, and Trump's lawyers are basically saying all these arguments that Trump's saying, and then it's being refuted by actual facts that are ascertainable, the courts don't like to probably say, hey, this president's full of crap, but,
They don't want to second guess the president.
No,
but the president's supposed to be in a position to lead us all.
Yeah, but I think they probably would, and they probably look at his record of kind of playing fast and loose with the facts too.
Well, if you go by, there was a survey that went out just in the last few weeks, and it's like 67% of the American population believes that most of the stuff Trump says is a lie.
Yeah,
I mean that's not, I mean, I'm not saying that from a political standpoint. I'm just saying that most of the people. Now, here's the point. A lot of those 67%, they know he's lying, but they don't care.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, yeah, I admit he's probably telling a lie about this, but that's all right. He gets stuff done.
That's what all politicians do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that's another way we've eroded the mantle of the office. Now we accept that the president is probably lying to us, and we're going to make our own judgments and sift through what's a lie and what's not.
Now, to talk about getting into court, like you said, you have to have standing, and that's what you were talking about a little bit earlier. And basically what standing is if you don't know, it's standing or locus standi is the term for the ability of a party to demonstrate to the court sufficient connection to and harm from the law or action challenge to support that party's participation in the case. So, for example, when you have a contract dispute, between, say, like somebody who you contracted to build a fence around your house and a landowner.
All right, let's go that way.
Then basically, the people who'd have standing to sue would be you and the person building the fence. Now, alternatively, if you think about it, if that fence was on your neighbor's property, the neighbor might have standing too, because they would have some sort of injury that is you can basically tie to that building of that fence. But somebody who is, say, five doors down, doesn't have any ties to the land, and just doesn't like you, they couldn't sue you over that, because they don't have any standing. They wouldn't have any real harm or...
They're not impacted by the fence.
Or, use one of my colloquialisms, son, you don't got a dog in the fight.
That's right.
I'm telling you, I'm going to be a TV judge one of these days.
Throw a rock into a pack of dogs, and the one that yelped is probably the one that got hit.
Now, one of the articles I read, basically, to have standing, they feel that the plaintiff would need to show that they have been injured by Trump's emergency declaration and that their injury could be rectified by a favorable decision from the court. So, basically, if the House Democrats tried to bring a case for this, they might not have standing or be able to be there.
It'd be hard for them to prove that they were hurt or impacted by this.
Now, if you try to tie it to the military... Maybe somebody who serves on the Armed Forces Committee like that, they might have more of a tangible injury suffered for it. If they're taking money that's already been kind of somewhat designated to go for these military projects and they're taking it away for something else, as the person who is in charge of securing financing for that, they might have some sort of ability to do that.
Are you, as a member of the military, allowed to be involved in a lawsuit against the people that employ you, the government?
Oh, I'm sure.
I was thinking that there was something that said you can't do that.
What, some sort of statutory immunity?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You can only sue the government if they allow you to, right?
Well, kind of. There's always limits on it for the most part. But I think basically if you're suffering an injury like that, then you could try to say it. I don't know. I'm just thinking outside the box here. Thinking outside the wall.
We'll put you on the other side.
Makes me think of Caddyshack. when Rodney Dangerfield's talking about it, and he's talking about the they got some land over there in China, right next to the wall, on the good side. Remember that?
Yeah. I usually remember his quote, "What happened? Somebody step on a duck?"
There was some guy, I was playing golf several years ago, and we were waiting to tee off because we didn't want to drive on to the people in front of us because they were playing pretty slow. Mm-hmm. And the guys behind us were getting kind of antsy. Like, go ahead and swing. You can't drive it that far. You're not going to hit him. And we just kind of shook our head. And the guy had a hat on, and it was like kind of a goofy looking hat like that. And I looked at him, and I was like, I like your hat. So what'd you get, a free bowl of soup with that hat? And just looked at the guy, and they didn't say much after that. Whenever you can get a Caddyshack dig on somebody at the golf course, they usually quiet up pretty quickly. But hey, and if I got a hold of that ball, I might have hit him.
Yeah, you never know.
I got a good drive.
Yeah. Sometimes I've done that because I'm trying to send a message to the group in front of us.
Move it along.
Yeah. Oh, did that hit you? Maybe if you hadn't been playing so slow, it wouldn't have come near you. Of course, you always try to size them up, see if they're bigger than you first.
Yeah.
So if it's a group of old ladies, swing away.
Yeah. Now, some other people that could possibly sue, like I said, were landowners who might face some sort of eminent domain action, taking their land to build this wall. And even though, for the most part, a lot of people probably would like to have that built, that's a long stretch of land, and I'm sure you're going to find some people that are going to be not happy about it. You know, I mean, they might not have such a big piece. They might not have like a big ranch. Maybe they only have a small piece of property, and you're taking up half their yard with it or something. I don't know.
Yeah, they might be a bed and breakfast, and they boast their view of Mexico from your bedroom window.
You can see the mesas of Mexico from here.
It's like, what's her name? Sarah Palin. I can see Russia from my front porch.
Yeah. Need to build a wall there, too. Basically, if there was a business that might lose some sort of government contract because funding was reallocated, that might be somebody else, too. Like, if there was somebody who was going to be helping repair some sort of infrastructure in Puerto Rico for one of these projects.
Sure.
Or alternatively, somebody who was going to be building a barracks for a military government.
Yeah, especially if you had a contract.
Yeah, they might be able to say, hey, we're being negatively affected here. So they would have standing to sue.
Right.
And then at that point, I think there probably would be a duty upon the president and the executive branch to show, hey, where is this emergency?
You duty on the president?
That's right. Right in the Oval Office.
You know, the game Cards Against Humanity?
Oh, yeah. I know it well.
Do you know what their drive is and their stance on the wall?
I think I may have read it, but I can't remember.
They're taking donations to buy pieces of property
along the
border. But then their goal is they're not going to sell them. They don't want to sell them. So they'd be ones that would do that. They would have standing because they don't want to sell them under eminent domain.
Yeah.
Should the wall come into effect. So I don't know how that wall purchase is going, but, you know, that may be one that would be affected by that and get in on a lawsuit like that. Because that's their whole purpose, is to prevent the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, this isn't the first time that Trump has declared a national emergency for something that's rather political.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the immigration ban. That was one that came about that way. And, you know, originally it was struck down when it first went out because they said that he had made the comment in the past that it was a Muslim ban.
Right.
That he was doing. And then he tried to say, no, this is for the security of our country that we have identified. They're all coming from here and everything. So eventually it got to the court where the court said, well, we know that he said this in the past, but we can't argue with the fact that, yes, there are terrorists that come from these countries than any of the other countries.
Right.
So they went ahead and let it stand. So that kind of shows a proclivity on the courts to err on the side of backing up the president or not second guessing the president, regardless of who he is.
Right. But I think you have a much better chance of saying that's an emergency and something fast moving and needs to be addressed quickly than the wall.
Well, yes and no. Nothing changed from the time before Trump was elected to the time Trump was elected. I mean, it wasn't like we had this great influx that we suddenly identified and, oh, we got to do something now. It's the same flow of traffic that we had prior to the election.
It's the same flow, but I think if you have more quantifiable numbers that support your stance too, then you can say, hey, this is an emergency. It needs to be addressed.
Well, I think it's more or less, you know, numbers can say whatever you want them to say. You know, that's one of the facts. Economists will tell you, do you want me to work from the outcome and work back? Or do you want me to work forward and come up with an outcome?
Yeah.
They can make the numbers say whatever you want to say. So looking at the same facts, now we have a national emergency, whereas before we were acceptable and what we were doing was fine.
Yeah.
So it just depends on how you want to look at it and what you want to say. But, you know, the glass is half full or half empty.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's my take on the whole wall. And this is like not kind of a legal argument, but this is actually a kind of a personal opinion. Do I think we need to have safe borders and control illegal immigrants coming to our country? Yes, I think we probably do need to do that. Do I think the wall is a national emergency? No, I don't think it is. I think there are a lot more pressing issues we have going on right now. And I think, for lack of a better term, and to be a little bit of a little vulgar about it, I think this has turned into a weenie measuring contest by Trump.
Mm.
I think Trump thinks that basically this will be his signature act. It'll be his wall.
And he's going to sign with his tiny little hand.
He's going to be remembered for it. And
yeah.
This is like his thing. No matter how hard we might try to forget his presidency, we're never going to forget this wall.
Oh, he's going to be remembered no matter what.
Yeah. But, you know, I think that's what this has turned into. It's not even about the national emergency now. Now it's turned more into winning and showing he can do it and having absolute power and pushing it, which to me is kind of a disgrace. And it makes me mad because I do think we need to have a safe border, and I think maybe, hey, you know what? Maybe a wall is not a bad idea, but is it a national emergency? No. If Congress doesn't agree on it, then you know what? It probably shouldn't be done. So that's kind of my thing on it. And I just think there's a lot more going on. Like, for example, you want to take money that's allocated to help Puerto Rico and Texas recover from something that is an actual emergency where a hurricane destroyed things, or you want to take money from building military barracks and things like that for our military. And you want to build this wall just so you can show that you're the president. You can do whatever you want. I think I have a problem with that. And that's where I'm just, it makes me kind of, I guess maybe a little mad that the president is using something that I think a lot of people believe in and think that they need, but he's playing on that for his own purposes, which is just wrong.
Well, you know, what I think is that he knew how to stir up his base during the election. He knew these bullet points that he could call. How many times did you see him leading the chant? Who's going to pay for the wall? Mexico, build the wall, build the wall. You know, they had all that going on. He knew how to stir them up with that. Same way with the immigration ban. He, you know, he did that. There was a lot of things that he did during his campaign that people had to know. Those aren't really real good ideas, but they sure get the right reaction from people so that they vote for him. Now, what he's doing is kind of maniacal, but he is keeping his campaign promises. Whether they're good or bad, whether they're going to be productive or non-productive, he's keeping his campaign promises.
Yeah.
Now, you know, it's nice to chant about let's have a wall, but when we get down to it, do we really want to spend that money for that instead of, like you say, to repair Texas and Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
Or to keep the military strong? Is that really worth it? And is that the best way and most effective way? I saw a report the other day where they had all the companies that wanted to bid on the wall come down and put up their best wall, samples of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been running tests on it. None of them have really passed the test of keeping people out if they want to come in. They had the one that they set on the steel barrier that they're now saying will be all right instead of concrete. They showed where a guy with just a common hacksaw cut right through two bars and made a hole that was big enough for anybody that wanted to climb through. And it, you know, wasn't going to keep anybody out.
Yeah.
You know, they do make ladders. I don't know.
Ladders? What is a ladder? I'm not even familiar with this term.
I mean, they've got those in Mexico, I'm pretty sure. So, you know, I don't know.
Then there's also the old tunnel trick.
Yeah. Yeah. Just ask El Chapo. He's had all kinds of tunnels there that pulled his stuff in and out. But, you know, I would feel better if we said, yes, there is a problem at our border. We don't want people coming in willy-nilly that we have no control over. Let's do a study and come up with some kind of finding of what is the best way to control this. And if we had a reputable group doing a reputable study and we came up with what seemed like a reasonable answer, I'd be in favor of that.
Maybe we don't need, maybe we need something in addition to a wall. Like maybe, you know, since
a force field.
Since we're using medieval type solutions like a wall, maybe we need to dig a moat.
Well, yeah, that's
maybe
right.
Maybe we could put sharks in the moat. A shark infested moat in front of a wall.
Yeah. Put some alligators in there too. Well, they could get out though. Sharks can't get out.
That's true.
But yeah, I mean, you do that. Now, I was thinking more like we could shoot radiation beams from one post to another so that you can't get through the radiation beams or something like that. That would keep people out. I mean, if you really want to be effective.
Well, Catherine Zeta-Jones could get right through there.
She would put like a smoke in it and see where they're at and slither through there.
Yeah, can't stop her.
Yeah, well, she's on this side, so we don't have to worry about her coming in. But I'm just saying, I think that there's a better answer. We're putting up the wall, Trump's monument
the Trump,
wall.
The Trump monument. That's what it is. It's a Trump monument.
Yeah. A monument of level thinking, you know, this wall. And, you know, I just think there's better ways to spend the money, or I think there's more effective ways if you really want to do it, if that's really your purpose and not just, you know, to build something as your legacy.
Signature piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's probably more effective ways. It may cost more effective ways, but I would rather spend more and do something that's effective than spend $5.7 billion for something that ain't going to work anyway.
Yeah. So, that's a pretty big price tag.
I know.
I don't know.
So I don't know how it will end up. But anyway, you know, there's been a lot of questions about, is this legal? It'll probably be struck down in court. And, you know, I'd have to say probably just from what I read, it's not. I mean, there was one legal scholar that said, basically, this is one of the first times Trump has done something that sounds like he talked to a lawyer first.
Right. Now, maybe it's not a great idea.
Yeah.
But it actually had some legal thought to it.
Yeah. And it actually, there's prepared ways that you can, you know, fight off any challenges to it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no precedence in history where what he's doing, they can cite and say, look, in this one they did it, they said that he was lying and they did it. And, you know, you can't do that.
It's a matter of first impression.
Yeah. And with the Senate being mostly Republican, you're not going to get that 2/3 vote if they were to try to end it, you know?
Maybe, maybe not. I think it does have some sort of party lines that go along with it. But I think it's kind of a smaller sect within the Republican Party that is more on board with this. I don't think it's necessarily all Republicans.
Well, I don't either, but I don't think you're going to reach that 2/3 threshold as a thing.
You never know.
Well, then that may be their only chance to stop it.
I tend to have faith in humanity still. I don't know why.
I've given up. That's why I watch all the zombie movies.
Yeah.
They're next. It's their turn next.
Shark Wall Tornado 3. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. We didn't talk about many legal terms today, but there were a couple thrown about. So I will ask you, Tommy, what is standing?
Standing is someone's ability to bring a lawsuit or an action based on the fact that they are impacted or hurt by somebody else's action.
That's true. Standing is also not what I'm going to be doing by the time all the football games are done today.
Or it could be Elton John. He's still standing.
And one other term I mentioned, a matter of first impression. Have you ever heard that term before?
A matter of first impression. Well, I know they give a first impression rose on The Bachelor and The Bachelorette. So I would imagine it's first thing you think when you see someone.
Maybe the same theory. No, a matter of first impression is something that you say whenever a case goes to the courts, but there's not any precedent. So it's a matter of first impression in the courts. There's not really any kind of guiding case law on it. You have to kind of look to something that's similar to it and make some sort of analogy. So a matter of first impression, something has never really been in the courts before. So like you said, this could be kind of a new thing.
Yeah. I mean, now if he was making private industries go build this wall or something like that, then you might say you have precedent for it already because of the thing that FDR went through. But
that's true.
With it being a government thing, you know, there is no precedence for overriding it.
That's right. Well, that's all the questions I have for legal briefs.
Well, you know, one thing they did say, a lot of the scholars have gotten together and discussed, they did say that if nothing else, this could be the impetus to bring about congressional action for in the future. That they may look at this and say, you know, if he does actually do this, or and even if he doesn't, it may be enough of a scare where they say, you know what, we do need to get together and form some type of solid legislation. Now, you can say the Republicans would have no interest in doing it, but right now, because, you know, it's their president, but it isn't always going to be their president. So if you're looking down the road at what's fair is fair, then you should be willing right now negotiate from a position of power and come up with some satisfactory answer to if a majority of Congress doesn't agree with something, they can override it or something to that effect.
Especially if you truly are a Republican conservative and you're for smaller government, you wouldn't like this.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
So don't try to say you're a conservative and you like this because you probably are talking out of your butt.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And you don't want to talk out your butt.
No. No, unless you're Jim Carrey.
Well, yeah, he does that pretty regular. Yeah. But he's always talking out his butt no matter what he's talking about. I don't like that guy.
How do you not like him?
He's just not funny. He's just annoying.
I don't know. I've liked him since In Living Color.
I remember him being on there.
He was Fire Marshal Bill.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something.
But he was just, I don't know. He's just always been annoying to me. I can't stand. The only one that I ever saw him in that I thought was good was the Truman Show.
That was a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, he was more serious in that than anything else. So I don't know.
Well, I think it's going to do it for the show. And just in case I don't see you later, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Well, all right.
It's from The Truman Show.
Oh.
That was his catchphrase.
Well, I don't remember that.
Oh.
I don't remember. I just remember the show and the general gist of it. But I didn't remember all that kind of stuff. I don't have a mind for all those sayings or anything, unless it's a Clint Eastwood movie. Those are the only ones that I remember actual lines from.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf, and I...